This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Some secrets are kept in the basement, others in the morgue. Welcome to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring defense attorney and host of the podcast, Defense Diaries, Bob Mata.
A motion to correct errors. That's an interesting term, especially when it comes to a murder trial and someone's been convicted, and it's coming from the person who's been convicted. You'd be a little bit concerned if there were errors in your case, glaring errors that everyone could see. On the inside, on the outside, everywhere. Lots and lots of errors. It's like I can't stress the word enough, just how many errors were in this. Joining me, Bob Mata, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. We are now moving into, it's not even a pellet yet, but his team, his attorneys, who you've had on your show, Defense Diaries, recently, filing a motion to correct errors. This is a term I'm not super familiar with, Bob, but I'm sure you can walk us through it.
Yeah, it's essentially, it's Indiana specific, and like, just to give you a frame of reference, in Illinois, typically after a trial, before we can file a notice of appeal, we have to file a motion for a new trial. They don't have that requirement in Indiana. What they have is this particular vehicle in which you can articulate for the court various errors that they believe were made during the course of the trial, and you can kind of really flesh out what exactly those errors were in great detail. And typically the argument, what you're requesting, which is what they call the wherefore clause, is you're either asking that they vacate the conviction or they grant a new trial.
Mm-hmm.
So, like this thing was kind of mind-blowing, right? I mean, it came out and it had a lot of details, a lot of stuff we hadn't heard. And they came with receipts on all of it.
Yeah.
You know, again, this is another example of information that was contained within the state's discovery that they had.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not stuff the defense cooked up.
No.
And
there's just, it's hard to remember all of the things that went on because this was just a cascade of madness over the last several years, specifically last year, as it was just like, I can't believe they're doing this. I can't believe they're denying this, or they're doing this, or they're saying that. Let's just kind of break some of it down. The alleged illegal custody transfer, when he was transferred to the Indiana Department of Corrections without his attorney being notified. How big of one is that? I guess to the layman, I would think the attorney would be notified. Do they have to be present, or what is this a big argument?
I think it's a huge argument. Allison and I, my partner in all things, including the law, we have a little bit of debate about the weight of this.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's huge. I mean, that was absolutely a critical phase of the case where he was not represented. Not only was he not represented at that hearing that didn't exist, which is the safekeeping hearing.
Yeah.
But he wasn't notified of it, and neither was the attorney that, as we can see, both law enforcement and Nick McClellan, who had a conversation with the guy, the lawyer that they had hired, retained on the 26th of October, they knew that he had been retained, and he didn't get notice. Allen didn't get notice.
Yeah.
I don't know when this thing takes place where the judge is apparently helping draft the request and it gets granted, which then leads to everything subsequent to it,
yeah,
which is Allen getting shipped off to Westville Allen getting thrown in, you know, the most secure cell and the most secure prison in all of the state of Indiana, and where he goes nuts.
Yes. You know? So okay. You spelled it out pretty good for me to understand it. I'm sure everybody to understand. This is a critical point because you're going from basically county jail and then you're being moved into solitary confinement immediately, 23 hours a day. You are in there. And then what we learn about what was happening in there, the taunting, the this and the that. So yes, having to notify your attorneys about that is probably a good thing, because could they have a chance to argue that normally if the system was working correctly?
Yeah, well, bigger than that, if Allen would have been present whenever this thing took place, and I keep using air quotes for those of you that are listening, because nothing happened. Mm-hmm. There was no actual safekeeping hearing.
Yeah.
This decision was made back channels, and this order was signed by Judge Diener, who shortly thereafter recused himself.
Yep.
And, you know, everything that happened after the fact, this is a direct result of that particular signature on that particular document. I mean, what matters is the lack of due process.
Yes.
And like in this country, the government just can't run around doing whatever they want to do without you being present or given notice that this proceeding is happening. Mm-hmm. Because Richard Allen, if he's presented with like, okay, if it's a situation where only Richard Allen's safety is at risk, where he's not a risk to other prisoners mm-hmm. or the guards, Richard Allen has the opportunity at that hearing to say, you know what? I'm willing to take the chance. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get shipped off to a prison.
Yeah.
To be, I respect the fact that you guys are so concerned about my safety, but I'm good with staying here at the county jail. He had the opportunity to be able to decline to be shipped to the prison. So, I mean, that fact alone speaks volumes about how much due process in this particular situation was violated. Because again, like, and there's a lot of back and forth between my wife and I in terms of, are they going to allow the argument to extend to what the end result mm-hmm. of that lack of due process early on resulted in? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like she doesn't think that they'll take it that far. She doesn't think that they'll look at it like, okay, well, he goes, you know, he's got psychosis, and we're going to go all the way back that if you would have had the opportunity to, you know, mount some kind of a defense to it and or decline to go back at the time that it was ordered, that none of this would have happened. Like she's not so convinced that they're going to allow that argument to extend that far. That's yet to be determined. Mm-hmm. But on its face, under the chronic case that is cited in that particular motion. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems pretty clear cut.
It does.
I mean, if you're following chronic and you look at that, and it's a Supreme Court case, I mean, it's a death knell for the state's case. I mean, they're saying that the guy has to get a new trial, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like, to me, that's where you have to kind of look at, that's where you extend that argument to like, okay, well, he made all these confessions or these statements against interest, and there is a direct result of the way that they confined him. Mm-hmm. You can't put it any other way. You know, I mean, it was the ability to be able to shutter him off from all human contact aside from Monica Walla, who we know enough about her to know that that was not much human contact for him.
Yeah.
And she very much seemed to have some kind of ulterior motives, I guess is the way that I would put it. You know, so I think it's got legs, you know, and a lot of times you can tell from when an attorney's preparing a motion, kind of the strength of which they feel the most powerful argument is going to be mm-hmm. first in line. So,
if you trace it all the way back and go, okay, none of this would have happened if this decision wasn't made. I get it. I'm going to play the devil's advocate here for a second, make a little analogy. Okay, let's go to the roller coaster park. And you go to the roller coaster park, you have a great day. somebody didn't do the maintenance on the one ride, and everybody gets up there, and you're at the loop, and oops, everybody falls and dies except for you. Is it the fault that you said, let's go to the roller coaster park that day? Or is it the fault of the maintenance that didn't do their job in that situation?
It's the fault of the if you're filing a civil lawsuit against an amusement park, it's absolutely the fault.
Sure,
of the
but if you're going back to the source of, if this decision wasn't made, this wouldn't have happened. I'm not necessarily speaking in a legal sense. I'm speaking more just in a trace it back and trace it back and trace it back. But this was a big decision, though. That's the thing. This is a major decision that was made. And if you didn't want to have any interference in a decision like this, and you're going to take him and put him in solitary confinement, you know there'd be objections to it, that's, I gotta guess, why they didn't notify anyone. And that's obviously not right, but I'm guessing that might have been the reasoning, because weren't they saying it's for his safety, that's why we're doing this? Wasn't there that their argument at that moment?
Yeah, it was. But the problem from their perspective is they couldn't articulate any specific threat.
Yes.
It was a general concept that, look, he's alleged to have killed two beautiful young girls. We all know how the people that are accused of and or convicted of doing those things, or how those folks are treated in prison. And it's awful hard to stay alive. Mm-hmm. And so that was their theory behind asking for it. Whereas they couldn't state one specific situation, or threat at all actually having occurred. Yeah. So, I get your point, and I'm with you. Cause agree. Yeah. Like if you're thinking about it, taking it out of the realm of the legal world, mm-hmm. and you're thinking about just kind of like going all the way back to the beginning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you don't make the decision to go to the amusement park that day, you're not in that situation. Right.
Sure.
So it is that concept. I mean, I guess what it begs the question is, and when I watched the interrogations of Richard Allen during the trial, which they showed us both of them, and the second one with Jerry Holman, where he really went hard at him, mm-hmm. With the Reed technique. They brought Kathy in at the end of it to try to really get him to cave, and Allen just wouldn't cave. He's like, you're asking me questions that I can't answer. Mm-hmm. You're asking me how the bullet got there. I have no fucking idea how the bullet got there, because it's not my bullet. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have a gun out there when I went there. So you're asking me to come up with an explanation of something that I can't explain because it's not mine. So and he was that guy that entire interview. He never even wavered at any point. And at the end of it, he's like, look, he's like, you are never, ever going to get me to say that I did something that I didn't do. Mm-hmm. And I walked away from that thing thinking that Holman accepted that as a challenge. And when you look at what happened afterwards, they walked out knowing what their case against him was. So when they have him in custody at that point, they have the casing and they have him at the bridge. Okay. By his own statement, he says, I was at the trails that day. I was out there. Mm-hmm. And they also know that they have a problem with their eyewitnesses, that none of them are describing a person that looks like Richard Allen. So they've gone so far as, this is our guy. We want to arrest him because we feel like we've got the right guy, but we really don't have enough evidence to get him. So they're wanting to squeeze. They worked him really hard to get the confession. Because mm-hmm. if you get the confession during one of those two interrogations where he caves, which neither of them were extremely long. He wasn't under huge amounts of duress. Yeah, they were coming at him in different ways using the Reed technique, but they weren't torturing him. They mm-hmm. weren't beating him. They weren't doing any of those things. So in terms of coercion, that wasn't going to be there. So if he would have confessed during either of the first two interviews, it would have been very, very powerful evidence because of the situation in which he confessed. You don't have all those things that you look for to say, okay, well, this wasn't a voluntary confession. They extracted it out of him. That wouldn't have existed in either one of those two things. So when you have that situation where they're looking at the strength of their case. They're saying, man, we need more. We're going to need more. And you know that they did everything in their power to try to extract a confession out of him, out of those two things. It doesn't happen. And then what happens, happens, meaning he gets sent to Westville and gets put in solitary. If you're not wondering whether or not that that was the plan in the hopes that he would lose his shit and start talking, and or that they would allow the inmates and or the guards or both to go at him until he cracks or says something, then you're just not being honest with yourself. Like, you, like, or you don't understand human nature. It's because like that, like, to me, are they ever going to be able to prove that? There's no way in hell.
No, but it's like, you know? He sent him there out of spite. Like, you're going to tell me you're not going to crack? I'll crack you. It's like, you break, you know, you break a horse or something. Like, you'll eventually get something to crack. It doesn't mean they wanted to, and it doesn't mean that it's in their nature to, or it's some reason that other than you breaking them that they broke. There's so much with it.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
Let's be honest. Nothing kills the thrill of a good murder mystery like a commercial for laundry detergent. It's like someone slapping a closed sign on your favorite dive bar. But you're not here for that, are you? You're here for the good stuff. So ditch the ads and upgrade to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. With True Crime Today Premium Plus, you get your crime straight. No chaser. Commercial free with extended interviews and early access. It's like getting the bartender's special when the bar's already closed. Search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and drink it all in.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.